Top.
Welcome back, everyone. This is going to be part two of our series on Onas Devarim, where we are talking about the question of Judaism. How will Judaism help us navigate the modern cultural landscape where we have different values in secular American society of freedom of speech, what's now termed political correctness by its critics, or just decency and sensitivity by its proponents? How do I manage to navigate where I just speak a certain way and the second party finds that offensive and is hurt by that? So let me share the screen with you and I'll do a really quick review of what we learned last time just to put this in context. So this is the first time during our Monday night slot that we are that we're doing a multiple part shiur. So this is a, let's call it a series within a series, right? We're doing a contemporary issues series, and this is a sub-series in one topic of contemporary issues. So as you can see, here was the scenario that we read last time. We give a few examples of different remarks that are, let's say, debatable. People using the term, let's say, LGBT versus LGBTQIA+, or girl versus woman, black versus African-American, terms that people don't necessarily mean to be malicious by saying, but other people will take offense at. And you can see over here in our table of contents, just I'll highlight what we did last time. What we did last time was section one and two. So section one, we talked about the origins of Onas Devarim. We looked at two psukim, two verses. One referred to what we call Onas Mamon, which is oppressing someone by overcharging them against their knowledge. The second category of Onah is what's called Onas Dvarim, which means harming someone emotionally, usually via speech. But we pointed out based on a few sources that we saw that it's a lav dafka, it's not necessarily limited to speech. In theory, if I could gesture, communicate in some other way, let's say I text somebody on their phone something that could hurt their feelings, that could harm them emotionally, that also constitutes Onas Devarim. It's not limited to words, but it's most commonly conveyed via words, which makes sense. So this was all section number one. Let me just scroll down a little bit. So you can see those psukim that we saw last time. This was the long gemar we went through in Bava Metziah. In Bava Metziah, this is the locus classicus for the rabbinical text. And then my scrolling is not working so well today. I'm not sure why. And then we saw the Gemara in Titus, which said calling someone a nickname could constitute Onas Devarim. Then we looked at the Rambam as well, which was other examples of Onas Devarim. And again, my scrolling is still not working so well, but just bear with me. Those who are with us for Mishnayos, we have the same issue. We mentioned based on the Mordechai that there is also a problem, not only a problem. The Onas Devarim is so severe that according to the Mordechai we mentioned, someone can even get Malkus Midoy Raisa. You even get lashes, biblically mandated lashes for harming someone with Onas Devarim. That's how serious it is. Now, we mentioned, according to most Rishonim, that's not the case. The commentary on the Mordechai Chidushi Anshi Shem says he needs Makis Mardus, only Midarabanan. Okay, point being is the fact that you even have Rishonim that are entertaining the possibility of giving Malkus, giving corporal punishment to someone who did cause someone emotional harm, it shows you how severe and serious it is and how careful we have to be. But then we took a look at section number two, which we looked at Rashi, the Shulchan Aruch. So the Shulchan Aruch was talking about nicknames, which we saw in the Gemara in Titus. So he said, he gave an important caveat. The only issue of giving someone a nickname is when you intend to humiliate them. But if you don't intend, if you have no intention to cause someone emotional harm, you can't be held accountable for that. Which brings us to section number three, which is what we are up to tonight, and I think what we'll spend the majority of our time on. So what I want to present, I've been using the term intention as a catch-all term. I want to now make a distinction, a very important distinction that we have to bear in mind. There is both intention, but before intention, there is awareness. So I could not be intending harm, which we'll see soon, but I could be aware that my statement will cause harm. But before we jump into there, let's go to the most obvious case where there's no issue. A case where I am not, forget about my intentions. I'm not even aware that my comment is going to cause harm to anybody. So this comes up in Rav Gusman in the Kuntrusi Shirim. So I don't know if I can't see everyone because we're on screen share, but I know Anne last time wanted to see contemporary sources. So I don't think she's with us tonight, but whoever sees Anne will convey this to her, hopefully. So the Kuntrusi Shirim by Rav Gusman. Rav Gusman is talking about onas mamon, ona that's caused by overcharging someone. So when it comes to overcharging someone, what we're going to basically do is draw an analogy. He says, "V'nir l'fi anias daiti b'lo yada shemanu nehida chay v'hasir ona k'mavur b'gemar v'rambam." Let's say I didn't realize I overcharged someone. I didn't realize I caused onas devarim to them. Mikol makom le'inyan iser lo mikri avera b'shogeg. True, I have to return the money to them that I took unrightfully, but I am not required to do teshuva for it because I may have taken too much money from them, but it's not like I accidentally committed an avera, a sin, because there cannot be a sin of onas dvarim, of onas mamon, without intention to cause that harm to someone else. So Rav Gusman, he only makes this statement in the context of onas mamon, causing monetary harm to someone. But it stands to reason, I would say kal v'chomer, certainly, when it comes to causing emotional harm, definitely one's intentions are important here. If you do not intend to, if you're not even aware that you're causing someone emotional harm, you cannot be held accountable for that. And this is not just my theory, but there is a very important contemporary sefer. It's called L'Re'acha Kamocha, which is, if you look, especially in the 20th, 21st century, there's a lot of what we call Likut Svarim, or specialty Svarim, where they'll pick a very narrow topic and give you everything on that. For instance, this is a class I'm doing this Wednesday night for a 10:30 group. They asked me to fill in. I'm teaching a number of classes on Tirchut Tzibura, not imposing time, imposing on the congregation's time, meaning like very long davening or waiting for the rabbi. And there's a book called Yikara Tzibura, just on the topic of Tirchut Tzibura alone, entire book. So there's this new genre of books where you just focus on very narrow topics.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Could you please explain what is meant by taking too much money? Do you mean that if something costs $8 and the person gave you $20 and you gave them change for 10 instead, you kept the rest of it?
Here's what it means. If something is worth $500 and then you, or let's say, let's go to the bigger number. Let's go, something's worth $5,000 and then you overcharge someone 1/6 more, so $6,000 for it, without them being aware that $5,000 was the MSRP on it, was the standard amount, that constitutes ona.
But is there are certain things or many things where there is no standard on it. It's what the person feels that it's worth
right
to them for knowledge, experience, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. That's why I said MSRP. So the standard retail price. Uh-huh. I think if there's a standard retail price for something, then that means it's well known. So for instance, I'll give you an example. I'm into board games as a hobby. I don't not like Monopoly or, you know, those kind of games, but like more intense, like fantasy Dungeons and Dragons kind of stuff. I like those kind of games. So I'm on some groups on Facebook where people sell them for really good prices. But every now and then, there's someone who like sells a game for like $200, and meanwhile, you can go on Amazon and it's like $50. So you see that there's clearly an issue. And you even go to the original website, you see the standard retail price; it's much less than $200.
But the person doesn't have to buy it for that amount of money. It's up to the person who's buying.
You don't, but if I put you under the impression that this is the standard amount, and I overcharge you for that, that would be ona.
So you're fooling them.
Ona is usually 1/6 more.
So you're cheating them.
Exactly. That's what ona is. That's what ona smo. It's cheating.
So how could you do that without intent?
If I was not aware, right. So that's exactly his point. His whole point is that it doesn't constitute ona if you did not have that awareness. That's exactly his point. That's the point. You can't commit it if you're not aware of the harm you're causing.
Okay, so that comes first. Okay.
So similarly over here, when it comes to emotional harm, to onas dvarim, you cannot be said to have caused emotional pain to someone. Like they might, the same way someone's being cheated, but neither party's aware of it, someone can receive emotional pain. But if you aren't aware that you were causing that, you can't be held accountable. Onas dvarim, in order to constitute onas dvarim, requires at least your awareness of the results.
Bad math.
So, got it.
What was that?
Okay. Bad math.
Was it bad math?
That's how you could do it. Bad math. That's how you could do it.
Oh, yes, yes.
Without intent.
Right? If you're someone like me who doesn't know mathematics so well, and
Anne wouldn't do that, but I could easily do it.
So it happened to me as well. I remember my grandparents on here, so they might know. My father used to be the youth director of our shul back in Bayswater. So when he would run events on a weeknight fundraiser, so when you came in, we had like a mini carnival, and he was short on staff. So I was running the cash register for the
concession. Rabbi, you're breaking up.
What was that? Oh, my internet's not so good. Can you hear me now? 1 second. Am I still frozen? Yes.
Better.
Yeah, better.
I'm going to go to another room.
No.
Just give me one moment, please. That would get better internet. I need to get... Yeah, sorry. All right. Do we have better internet here? Are you able to hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Thank you for your patience. Apparently our internet does not go throughout our entire apartment so well. Okay, continuing. So, as I said, so my father, when he was youth director, he had me run a concession stand at an event, and I had to figure out how to do math on the spot to make sure everyone was getting the correct change. It's Chataya Nimaskera Yom. I still don't know if I gave everyone the correct change. I had to be tutored in math when I was younger. So I really hope they all forgive me if I cheated them a few cents out. I was not aware of it. But as Susan pointed out, bad math could lead to these kind of things. Definitely true. So look in this practice. So where I was before, I was saying that there is a practical sefer, a practical book, which collects all the different halachos, the different laws of interpersonal relationships. And it's called, very aptly put, L'Re'acha Kamocha, that you should treat your friend like yourself. So here's our case. Adam should sear es chaver b'shogig. Let's say you accidentally cause pain to someone. D'hayim shlo yada sh'amayze shlo alu l'grum l'tzar l'chaver. You're not aware. You didn't even think that it would cause emotional harm to your friend. Lo avar al iser lo sonu. He has not committed the prohibition of onas dvarim. Why? Because it needs to be an understanding when you do it. Because it's just human nature that you're going to make a mistake at some point. You're going to say something or do something that's going to harm someone. That's just an inherent risk in any interpersonal interaction. And here's an example to back it up so it's not abstract. Ruvain seeking him Shimon, she's kasher lo b'shaslai mucheres. Ruvain says to Shimon, call me up at 11 p.m. at night, right? That's a late hour, right? Betos, chayag Ruvain misfar, acher b'er adam shishim bosashah. But then Ruvain accidentally calls the wrong number. He calls Levi instead and wakes him up in the middle of the night. So Ruvain is not selbenimus. Ruvain apologizes. He doesn't need to request forgiveness for the purpose of doing tshuva, for performing repentance. Because he did b'shogeg. Obviously, you should be careful. But it's just normal that every now and then you're accidentally going to dial the wrong number. You're going to call someone at the wrong time. Maybe you'll accidentally wake them up. And that's, again, you try to be careful, but that's just a part of human nature. So there's no ill intent over there. Therefore, he did not violate the prohibition of onas dvarim, because not only did he not have any intention, he wasn't even aware when he picked up the phone that he was going to cause some form of distress to someone else. So that's paradigm number one. Paradigm number one is where, forget about my intention, I'm not even aware that my action is causing harm to anyone else. Right, so I might just be talking with someone, use a particular term. I wasn't even aware it was going to cause them any harm. So that, it seems obvious to me based on these sources, there is no issue. But that doesn't really get to the bottom of the matter, of the heart of the matter of what we are discussing. Because again, our scenario is not a case of where I'm not aware that party B doesn't like the term I'm using, but it's where I'm aware that the second party, the second person, doesn't like what I'm saying, but I aver that it is my right to be able to speak the way I want to speak, and you have no right to impose on that. So we haven't seen that case yet. But by saying yet, I mean we're about to get to it right now. So are we familiar with the term trigger warning? Yeah, let's just get some nods. Trigger warning? Okay, not everyone nodded, so I'll tell you what it is. A trigger warning is, it's very popular today among people my age. Essentially, it's if you're about to talk about a sensitive topic, you tell people trigger warning. Let's say you're discussing rape. So you'll say trigger warning, I'm about to discuss rape. And in some colleges, if they do that, they'll give students the right to leave the classroom so that they don't need to relive traumatic experiences. So I tried finding a Gemara that might talk about it, and this is what I came up with. The Gemara Bava Metzia, the same sugya from earlier before, the same passage in Gemara, says, "My dichsiv v'ger lo sona lo slachsenu ki gemer ha'yisim beretz Mitzrayim." What does it mean? You should not oppress the convert because you were once converts in the land of Egypt. Rabbi Nassan Omer, "Mum shebecha al tomar lechavercha." If you know what it feels like to have a mum, to have some sort of defect or something that you are sensitive to having, you should also be aware of be sensitive to the things that your friend might be ashamed of or the things that your friend doesn't want brought up. Don't harm them the same way you don't want to be harmed. V'hayim da'amrei inshi, and this is a saying that people would say, but the Gemara seems to put its stamp of approval on it. D'zakif le skifa b'diusake. If there is a hanging, let's say you are talking with a particular family and you know in this family's history, one of their family members was executed and was hanged by the government. Lo nema le lechavre zokiv b'nesel. Don't go over to your friend and say, can you hang the fish up? Because Rashi explains on here, you know, before I look at Rashi, why wouldn't you be able to? What would be the issue of bringing up a hanging to your friend if there was a hanging in the family?
Lord might upset him.
It might upset him. So let's delve into what is upsetting about it. So Rashi thinks what's upsetting about it is, and it's very, there's not a lot of a mafarshim that really commented on this. I tried to find more. It wasn't that much. Rashi comments and says, why? Because it's genai hu lo. It's a disgrace. He feels ashamed to have a relative that was hanged, that was executed. So when you bring up anything that has to do with hanging, you remind him of the shame of having a family member hanged, of having a family member executed. But b'mechilas kavod Rashi, if I may say it, lefinias daiti, my humble opinion, there may be another way to understand this line in the Gemara. I don't know if the line of the Gemara is exclusively referring to when you cause shame to someone, but it could be also that you are making them, you're reminding them of a traumatic experience. You're evoking feelings of trauma. Because if this, any person, I think any reasonable person who sees their beloved relative executed in front of their very eyes, that is definitely a traumatic experience. And that, and because of that, the Gemara is telling us that we have to be sensitive that if someone had, God forbid, a traumatic experience, we have to be careful, even in just neutral speech, not to bring up anything that might harm them. And what I find, assuming you buy my interpretation, what comes out from here is that we have a case where you have neutral intentions. By no means do you want to bring up, do you want to evoke feelings of trauma toward your friend, but you are aware that if you use the word hang or hanging, it will evoke trauma. So nonetheless, even though I don't have any malicious intention, since I know nonetheless, no matter what I intend, if I use that word, if I talk about hanging, it's going to cause distress to my friend, I'm not allowed to use that word in front of him because it'll cause him distress. So that is, I think, perhaps if I were to try to find a source for a trigger warning or for the idea of being sensitive to possibly coming close to evoking trauma, to bringing up traumatic memories for an individual, this Gemara is something that came to mind. But I want to hear your opinions, because this is a little bit of my own read into the Gemara. It might be a little bit anachronistic. Do you think that this Gemara talks about what I am explaining? Do you think this could be used to support the modern practice of trigger warnings?
It's kind of very far-fetched. I don't know. I mean, if you would be going someplace and you would say to this person that you're with, to wait for me, I'm just going to hang up my coat. Or could you hang my coat? Or, you know, can I hang your coat up for you? I mean, who thinks about that? It's just like, so, you know, it's a natural word to use. You'd have to think, let's see, how can I say, put my coat over there on the hook? You know, you just wouldn't naturally think that way.
Right. So, and that, exactly. And people don't naturally think that way. And that's the chiddush of the Gemara. That's what this Gemara is coming to tell us, that most people don't think that way. But if you come by someone who you know is very sensitive to the use of that terminology, even though there's nothing inherently wrong with using it, the Gemara is saying to be sensitive to it nonetheless. That's why I think this is such a novel Gemara. It's such a startling Gemara, because it asks us to go beyond the call of duty. It asks us to be sensitive even to neutral terms. So I agree with you, Phyllis. It is very odd. And that's why I want to bring this Gemara to our attention, because I would not have thought that we had to be that sensitive until this Gemara told me otherwise.
Wow.
Anyone else have any other thoughts, comments, or critiques of my presentation of that?
That's a wow. You have to really think about what you're going to say so carefully before you say it.
Well, that's why I wanted to reinterpret the Gemara, actually, because not about shame, but about trauma. You see, I mean, I don't want to say most people, I don't want to make generalizations, but I think if you're talking to someone who doesn't have any particular traumatic experiences, then you don't need to worry about that. But if you're talking with someone, if you're working with someone who suffered certain traumas, you need to be aware of that. If you're working with someone, you know, God forbid, went through the Holocaust, then I would imagine there are certain terms that could make someone think about that again, and we need to be sensitive to that. So I think that's what the Gemara is coming to say. But let me give you a case, going back to our friend, L'Reacha Kamocha, going back to this contemporary book, that tells us halacha l'maisa, what he thinks. So again, very similar case, but I think different also. Adam she'eno mischavin letzaris chaver. Let's say I have no intention, no malicious intention to cause any harm to my friend. However, achu yodea sha'maisa shelo olo ligrom tzar l'chavero, but you are aware that if you use a certain term, it will cause distress to your friend. Osa b'kach iser, you have performed a violation of onas tvarim. The einza doma l'mikra d'li'il shentziris chavero b'shogeg. This is not similar to where you what we just talked about beforehand, where you caused distress or emotional harm, the shogeg, because over there, he wasn't aware that was causing harm. But here, you're aware that's going to cause harm. You just don't intend it. But your intention doesn't matter. It's your awareness that seems to matter here. But here's the thing, though. What's the example that the Re'a HaKamocha gives? Let's look at his practical example, and you'll see I don't think it's analogous to the Gemara we just saw. His example is Reuven Chassam ben Mechonioso es Hakvish. Reuven parks his car in the middle of the street. Lo ha'isulo kavano tzar acher. He's not trying to cause harm or distress to anyone. But he knows by waiting in the middle of the street, it's going to cause harm and it's going to cause distress to people who are trying to get to work or trying to pick up their kids, whatever it is, by making them wait in the middle of the street. So therefore, Reuven aver below son. Reuven committed onas dvarim. Reuven did not intend to ruin and to put everyone 5 minutes behind on their schedules, but he knew by putting his car in the middle of the street that's problematic, that it would cause that. So that's his example of a case where you don't intend harm, but you know it causes harm. But I don't think this case is analogous to our conversation, because our case is not – when you put your car in the middle of the road, that's not something you're allowed to do in general. You're not allowed to put your car in the middle of the road. The road is – I mean, look, I don't know law so well. I see we have some lawyers with us here in the room. So I'm sure there's a law in the books that says you can't park your car in the middle of the highway. All right, I'm sure the police could pull you over for that. I'd be surprised if I was wrong. But over here, in the case we're discussing, you're having a normal conversation with someone and you have a preference of terminology. So even though the Re'a HaKamocha says in the abstract that if you are aware of harm but you don't intend harm, that's problematic, I think he's talking about a completely different case. He's talking about where you do something that's objectively problematic, not where I use a terminology which the second person, the person I'm talking to, happens to interpret it as harmful. Do we see that distinction? Does that seem like a reasonable distinction, or does anyone want to dispute me on that one? You're welcome to dispute me, by the way.
Master, can you hear me?
Yes, Sadie.
Okay. You, on the subject of trigger warnings,
yes.
What's going on in the college campuses today is absurd. If you don't adhere to the official dogma as taught by the professors, they dump all over you. You get canceled just by saying something that in a normal society you can express yourself of. And if somebody disagrees, so you have an intellectual discussion. You back the topic back and forth. You may come to an agreement. You may not. But you walk away friends because as the dogma goes, I may not agree with what you have to say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. With this trigger warning culture, you don't have a right to say anything that they don't agree with.
Right. So if I understand what you're saying is that the way I explain trigger warnings is we can talk about what we think is pertinent to talk about, just we give people, the minority people who would be put in distress by hearing it, the option to walk out if they need to. But the point you're making is that the culture has gone a step further than what I explained, which is that because a few people will be put in distress or offended by a certain message, that means that I'm not allowed to give that message to the public in general now, right? Is that the point you're making?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, good, good. And this is definitely that case, that kind of case where on the one hand, I want to say something, on the other hand, you're offended by it. Do you have the right to censor me because you feel offended by it, or a few people are offended? So good. That is the heart of the matter here. That's the question we're going to deal with. That's the question we're dealing with.
Okay. So Rabbi?
Yes.
Can I present you or give you a trigger warning?
By all means.
Okay, so I'm doing it.
Oh, okay.
On something
you, Jerry, were you following that up?
On something you were going to say.
Okay, I thought you were about
to
give
me. I want to know what you're going to do about it.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right. Let's, okay, so just moving forward. There's one more paradigm that I didn't miss, we didn't get to yet, that I want to make sure to cover. So we talked about one paradigm, which is I'm not aware of the harm I'm causing. That's okay. You didn't do anything wrong. Then we talked about the second paradigm, which is, I'm aware of the harm I'm causing, but I'm not intending any harm. That, we said, is probably problematic, but we'll get to how it might not be an issue in certain cases soon. And then the third paradigm comes from a story in Tanakh. So we might be familiar with Shmuel Aleph. So Shmuel was born to Chana. Chana had a co-wife named Penina. They were both married to a man named Elkanah. Penina had children, Chana did not. And what Penina did was she would critique, she would humiliate Chana that she did not have any children. So the question is, how could Elkanah, who was a great tzaddik, a great righteous man in his generation, allow this, not just bickering, this terrible verbal abuse go on between his wives? So the Gemara tells us, Amrav Levi, Satan and Penina l'shem Shemayim niskavnu. Satan, Satan himself, and Penina, they both had good intentions. What intentions does the Satan have that are good? Satan came to Chazi al-Kadosh Baruch Hu, did not yadayte basar Iyov. So if we remember, if we ever learned the book of Job, Sefer Iyov, which we'll address more in our Thursday morning class, in our Jewish philosophy class. So Job, he was a righteous man. Satan comes to God and says, you know what? He's having a little bit too good. Let me test him. Let me give him trials. So he actually had good intentions to Satan, because he said, Amar, chas v'shalom, minchile l'rachmunasei d'avram, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu might come to love Eov so much, they'll come to not abandon Abraham, not abandon Avram Avinu, but he'll turn his attention away from Avram and his children. This assumes, of course, that Eov is not a Jewish person, which is a dispute. But Penina, what were her good intentions? Dichsiv uka'asta tzarasa gam ka'aspa vor harima. So we look at Rashi in Sefer Shmuel. He quotes this as well. Bavor harima shatispalel, to get Chana to pray. Because ultimately what happens is, after Penina humiliates Chana, and she essentially motivates Chana through her distress, through her agony and humiliation, to cry out to God in prayer. And ultimately through that prayer, she was answered. And she had none other than Shmuel HaNavi himself, Samuel the prophet, who came from that. So Penina actually had good intentions. So this is a different case. She intended for some good results for Chana to pray to God. But even though there were positive results, her short-term goal was to cause harm to Chana. We are told by the rabbis that even for a long-term good result, you can't cause humiliation and harm to someone else. You have no right to do that. So Penina is a case in point where there might be a positive element to what you're doing, but you are never, here there's no ambiguity, you are not allowed to intend harm toward another person. If you are intending harm, that is problematic. And the Ben Yoyada, this is just like an interesting footnote.
Rabbi.
I can just get one source and I'll take questions. Yeah. The Ben Yoyada argues on Rashi. He actually, just this is like a footnote over here, a side point, but very interesting to share. It came up when I was putting together this year. So the Ben Yoyada, commenting on this Gemara, he says, how is it possible that Elkanah did not stop Penina from causing humiliation and harm to Chana? Also, we are told that Penina's children died because she caused emotional harm to Chana. But wait, if Penina at least had good intentions, why would she receive such a terrible punishment? I mean, she'll be punished because she caused harm, but if her intentions were good, that seems a little harsh for her children to die. So his answer is, actually, he understands Penina to be more of a villain. He understands that Penina intended, actually, to cause harm to her co-wife. It was pure bickering. And rather, she just made it appear like she was doing it for Chana's benefit, to motivate her to pray to God. But it was all a pretext to just continue causing agony and emotional pain and distress to Chana. So that was just an interpretation I wasn't aware of. not to say maybe everyone else was aware of it, but I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Anyway, that's the end of this section. I just want to, before I take Phyllis's question, the next section we're going to look at is, until now we've seen, it sounds like you can never intend emotional harm to someone else. What I want to show you, and this is going to be next week's shiur, is that there are cases, actually, where if someone espouses certain views, it may be that are not necessarily in line with the Torah, it may be permissible or even commendable to cause what would otherwise be called onas dvarim toward them. So this is going to be very important for when we talk about contemporary discussions, and we'll delve into it more next time as well. So right now we're at a place where it sounds like usually there's very little tolerance for causing distress towards another person, even if it's not with intention to cause harm. Next week, we're going to see a lot of exceptions to that rule, and we're going to see all the different instances and cases where it is A, either permissible to cause emotional distress, or B, even in a few cases, commendable, depending on the case, to dafka use a terminology, to dafka use, specifically use terms that are against the preference of the offendee. But that's just what our appetites for next time. We have a few minutes left, so I'll take questions and comments, and with that, we will conclude. So I think Phyllis was first.
So remember I said trigger warning.
Yes. Right?
My name is Penina.
Uh-huh.
And my best friend's name is Hannah.
Ah. So, what do you know? So God willing, you are rectifying what happened to Tanakh.
I have to tell you that I grew up for most of my life wondering why in heaven's name I got the name Penina. It really disturbed me a lot. And I went through asking many rabbis about that name, what, you know, how I should feel about that name, because I didn't feel good about it. Mm. And they all came up with the easier of the answers, that Penina was trying to encourage Hannah to pray with more kavana. And
what was your mother's answer?
I accepted it. My mother's name? Why?
No, your mother's her answer. Yeah. Why did she name you Penina?
I never asked her.
Oh,
I remember. Named somebody, after somebody?
It was somebody in the family. And I know. Yeah.
I mean, most of us were named after people, and when we have names we don't like, that's why.
I don't even know, but I grew up with not feeling good. And it's interesting because the name means something valuable. It's that, you know, yeah. There's a saying, Rachok Mipnine Mechra.
Yeah.
There are other sayings that look at a penina, either a pearl or a ruby, with
a beautiful
with,
name.
You know, being something of beauty, and yet this doesn't figure. It doesn't go together.
Well, maybe the idea God had in mind was that you could rectify the relationship between Hannah, Penina, and Tanakh by having such a wonderful friendship with your friends that you had. So maybe
I have.
That's what
I
had in mind.
I still have.
That you have.
Yes, many years.
They continue for many years. Okay, Ellen, thank you. Yes, thank you for coming. Were there any other questions? Anyone else have any other questions or comments or thoughts? Okay, next time we are really going to get into the controversial material, where we talk about people who are exceptions to the rules, people who don't qualify for onas dvarim, people who Torah actually says that you could cause onas dvarim toward. So stay tuned for next time. This is a build-up, and God willing, we should reach the crescendo during our next year, next week. And
thank you so much.
We will likely be moving to 8 o'clock. I'm going to look at the schedule, but I think we're going to move to that. Please look at your emails at the weekly bulletin once we make that decision. Okay? Have a wonderful evening, everyone.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.